Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
The following podcast is brought to you by Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. Jump on Amazon.ca today and get your free sample of the best-selling ebook in Unexplained Mysteries.
It's the odd to Newfoundland. Ghostly greetings from your host, Jonathan. Mysteries, ghosts, monsters, and lore. East Coast esoterica and so much more. If it's up to you, friend, it's on the up to Newfoundland.
Ghostly greetings from the oldest city in North America. I'm your host, John Mallard, bringing you the best in East Coast esoterica. You, my friends, have stumbled upon the Odd the Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast for the month of November 2017. Guys, I hope you had a wonderful Halloween. You're wonderful. A masterpiece, beautifully made, important to people because you're important to me. Highly favored by your creator, whether that's a god or by the law of averages and physics working together. You're thirsty for knowledge and addicted to wonder. You, my friend, are an oddball. And here on this show, you're family and we are one. Guys, this is episode 46 of the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast, your monthly paranormal variety show. And just to give you a heads up how fast this year is flying by, next show is the Christmas special on December 1st. So how about that for a year flying by? Pretty quick, hey? Guys, I hope your Halloween went really well and your Thanksgiving's here in Canada. I hope everyone's doing good. I had a lot of fun this last month. Things have been going really interestingly and differently here at the Mallard household. As you guys know, I am still a foster parent looking after a medically challenged child. And, you know, I'd say challenge because it's quite the challenge for all of us. My little girl, my little boy, Faith and Sam are doing really, really well too. My wife, of course, she's doing okay. Our cat is sick, so it's kind of a sad time for her right now. I think she's taking it pretty hard, but poor Tigger, you know, she's been around for 16 years. She's an older cat, and she's begun, shown the signs that it might be time for her to cross the Rainbow Bridge. So, bit of sad news, but you know, not every show is going to be super happy and off the wall. I mean, good things and bad things happen to all of us. I hope everything's going okay out in your neck of the woods, though. I'm pretty excited about this show. I got two friends of mine coming on later who I've known for years. One is a former guest, so I think you guys are going to really like this show. It's very, very different. And, you know, we cover a plethora of topics, too. It's really nice to talk about different things in a conversation instead of just sticking to the one thing. You know, we kind of covered UFOs and conspiracies, and we talked ghosts and ghost stories. It was really, really fun, and I hope you guys enjoy that, too. Of course, a little later also on the show, Laura's going to cover that strange UFO incident that took place in St. John's, Newfoundland over this last month. It's nice when the MUFON Minute actually reflects a story from Newfoundland for a change. So that's really, really cool. Anyhow, I'm going to strap on in. It's November. It's time to dig on in and get going with the paranormal news. And of course, I mean, it just wouldn't be a paranormal news without something about dinosaurs, right? An enormous meat-eating dinosaur measuring up to 30 feet in length once roamed what is now southern Africa. It's considered a mega carnivore dinosaur. Discovered by a team of researchers from universities in the UK, South Africa, and Brazil, this prehistoric behemoth was part of a group of carnivorous dinosaurs known as megatheropods. Like, to me, like, that's just awesome name for dinosaurs. Megatheropods. I mean, it's probably not as intimidating as Tractor! But, you know, we'll move on from that. Its footprints were found in the Mesero district of Lesotho, a small country in southern Africa. The discovery of such a large carnivorous dinosaur dating back to the early Jurassic epoch was particularly unexpected, as meat eaters from that time were typically much smaller. The latest discovery is very exciting and sheds new light on the kind of carnivore that roamed what is now southern Africa, said Dr. Fabian Null of the University of Manchester. That's because it is the first evidence of an extremely large meat-eating animal roaming a landscape otherwise dominated by a variety of herbivores and much smaller carnivorous dinosaurs. It really would have been top of the food chain at that time. So there you go, a real live monster. You know I'm going to sneak any weird news about dinosaurs in here too, because I just love dinosaurs. I just can't get enough. Did you hear about that really strange thing NASA caught? NASA reveals the eerie sounds of space. The space agency has put together a compilation of spooky audio clips from its robotic space missions. Sound waves cannot travel through the vacuum of space, but when radio emissions picked up by space probes are converted into audio recordings, it is possible to listen to what's out there. This collection of undeniably eerie audio clips, which sound like they have come from the 1960s episode Doctor Who, and I just had to put the story in here because you guys will find out later, has been put together just in time for Halloween. I know it's November 1st, but we're going to go ahead and play them anyway. Let's have a little listen, shall we? Ooh. Creepy. Here's another one, too. Okay, that's just freaking weird. Drop the bass! Man, those aliens know how to party. Oh, man. Really, really interesting that these sounds are actually coming from space. I think that's wild, you know? Just really eerie. Really, really eerie. All right, moving along. Are you a fan of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles? Well, we all remember Bebop and Rocksteady, right? Well, what if I told you we might be getting closer to those villains? A farm in Cambodia has reportedly been creating massive mutant pigs with abnormally oversized muscles. The illicit operation, which has been uncovered by animal rights organization PETA, has been met with universal condemnation ever since details about it were posted online 3 days ago. Mutant pigs bred to grow to enormous size just to be slaughtered and eaten, wrote PETA's Danny Prater. This is the very real horror that seems to be unfolding on a Cambodian farm, where genetically altered pigs are being bred to develop heaping knots of muscle mass for consumption. The idea of breeding genetically modified pigs to increase the amount of meat produced is something that has been explored before, despite protests from animal rights groups. In 2015, an experiment conducted by researchers in South Korea and China demonstrated that the concept did not work in practice because most of the animals didn't survive, and even among those that did, most suffered from health problems and were nowhere near ready for commercial consumption. Hulk-like pigs are the stuff of nightmares, not meals, and those who are genetically engineered are also likely to be born with painful health issues, PETA wrote. So there you go. We're one step closer to getting Bebop. And I'm pretty sure if I ate mutant pig meat, I'd probably die. But fear not. A new study has suggested that the mind can still be active even after the body stops showing signs of life. The research, which was led by Dr. Sam Parnia, Director of Critical Care and Resuscitation Research at NYU Langone School of Medicine in New York City, involved investigating patients who had suffered a cardiac arrest and had died but had been successfully resuscitated by doctors. The team found accounts of patients who recall being aware of entire conversations being carried out in the room even after they had been pronounced dead. By cross-referencing these accounts with medical staff present at the time, it was possible to verify that what they had heard was real. Some of the patients had even managed to see things happening around them during this time. Death is typically defined as the point at which the heart has stopped and blood is no longer flowing to the brain. However, now it seems as though a person's mind can still remain active after this time. Technically, that's how you get to the time of death. It's all based on the moment when the heart stops, said Dr. Parnia. Once that happens, blood no longer circulates to the brain, which means brain function halts almost instantaneously. You lose all your brainstem reflexes, your gag reflexes, your pupil reflexes. All of that is gone. But in 2013, researchers at the University of Michigan determined that the brain may enter into a hyper-alerted state for a short period of time after clinical death. Could this be the point at which near-death experiences occur? The search for answers continues. Oh, don't feel so morbid about stuff. We still got some guides to happiness. And, you know, why not take some timely and sage advice from Einstein himself? Albert Einstein's handwritten notes on the secret of living a happy life have resurfaced after 95 years. One of the most celebrated scientists in history, Albert Einstein's name itself has become synonymous with the concept of genius thanks to his myriad of contributions to the field of physics. His interests, however, were not simply limited to science, as evidenced by an extraordinarily rare set of notes that he wrote for a courier all the way back in 1922. Einstein had been staying at the Imperial Hotel in Tokyo during a lecture tour in Japan when he realized he did not have any spare change on hand to tip the courier. To compensate, he handed the man two handwritten notes and said, "Maybe if you're lucky, those notes will become much more valuable than just a regular tip." Fast forward to the present day, and now both are set to fetch a fortune at auction in Jerusalem. A quiet and modest life brings more joy than a pursuit of success bound with constant unrest, one reads, while on the other, Einstein wrote simply, "Where there's a will, there's a way." What we're doing here is painting the portrait of Einstein, the man, the scientist, his effect on the world. Through his writings, said Einstein activist Ronnie Gross, this is a stone in his mosaic. And man, it just really defines my life right now because there's so much turmoil. But you know what? Where there's a will, there's a way. And it's very, very inspiring. Guys, we talked about mega carnivorous freaking dinosaurs, you know, 30 feet long in length in Africa. We talked about creepy and even heard of some really creepy stuff from NASA. We talked about mutant pigs, you know. Man, here comes Bebop. We also chatted a little tiny bit about those crucial moments after you die and how you might actually still be conscious. And of course, we mentioned Einstein's handwritten notes on the secret to a happy life. Guys, all of these stories have been odd to Newfoundland.
Thanks, John. I would like to welcome you to your MUFON Minute for November 2017. I guess the most logical spot to start is the big story out of Newfoundland and Labrador. It was found on the CBC website and was written by Jeff Bartlett. Video shared with CBC shows a bright light falling before disappearing in the Southside Hills area near St. John's Harbour on October the 23rd. Police say several people also called and reported seeing the object. Dozens took to social media to speculate on what they had just seen, with theories ranging from landing alien spaceships to foreign missile launches. However, Gary Diamond of the local branch of the Royal Astronomical Society said all evidence points to the object being a meteor. It was a shooting star, which we would call a fireball because it was brighter than Venus, he told the St. John's Morning Show on Tuesday. On an average night, you'll get to see two shooting stars an hour. This one was much brighter, and it exploded, which is what caught people's eye, I think. Diamond was setting up his telescope to observe the oriented meteor shower when he noticed the exploding light over St. John's moving west. He said it's rare to see a fireball that bright near the city, but with activity from the Orion expected to continue through late November, it's likely it was part of that meteor shower. When a meteor lands on the Earth, the object is called a meteorite. However, Diamond doesn't believe the object from Monday night made contact with the ground. Diamond said they also listen for the sound of impact to determine whether the rock collided with the ground or if it burned up in the atmosphere. It didn't seem from my angle to go down, so I would assume it didn't produce a meteorite, he said. No sound was heard, so that's another thing. Usually, if you get a meteorite and it falls near you, you'll hear a sound. The video acquired by CBC shows a flash of light as the object disappears from the sky, which Diamond suspects will result in some people searching the Southside Hills to look for a leftover space rock. Despite his doubts, anyone who does find a meteorite, which would be as much as 4.6 billion years old, should report it immediately to the American Meteor Society. If it did produce a meteorite, it would be the first meteorite found in Newfoundland, he said. Truly amazing. Be sure to check out the video. You can see its nice little tail as it comes down. It's definitely worth a watch. In honor of Remembrance Day, I would like to bring attention to several military-based UFO sightings. I know we have talked previously at length about the 1980 Rendlesham Forest incident, which is a very famous example. In 1973, at the Elgin Air Force Base in Florida, an unidentified object was tracked by a Duke Field radar unit during the same time period and within the same area that 10 to 15 people observed four strange objects flying in formation between Milton and Crestview, Florida. This happened along Interstate 10, which is according to these military officials. Reports from that base indicated that a bright, glowing ball of light could be seen traveling parallel with an Air Force C-130 aircraft, but at a much higher altitude. In 1975, at the Wirt Smith Air Force Base near Oscoda, Michigan, USAF personnel reported an unidentified craft flying within exceptionally secure Strategic Air Command airspace over a B-52 base housing nuclear weapons and other delivery systems. An incoming KC-135 tanker was later ordered to commence pursuit over Lake Huron. The object or objects last seen back over the base weapons storage area were never found. In 1986, a very important year as it was the year of my birth, the Brazilian Air Force allegedly detected and intercepted UFOs in southeastern Brazil. This is called the Sao Paulo UFO sighting. Brazil has a very illustrious history with military UFO sightings. In 1996, the Varginha UFO incident, the Brazilian Armed Forces allegedly captured an extraterrestrial being after a UFO crash. The Brazilian government has officially denied these claims. According to military and media reports, the creature was first sighted by three women ranging in ages from 14 to 22 years. The sisters Lilaine Valaquir and Fatima Silva, we'll call them the Silva sisters, and their friend Katia. They allegedly saw the creature in the afternoon of January 20th, 1996. A biped around 5 feet tall, with a large head and very thin body, V-shaped feet, brown skin, and large red eyes. It seemed to be wobbly or unsteady, and the girls assumed it was injured or sick. The sisters said they fled and told the mother that they had seen the devil. The woman did not believe them up until she went to the area where she had allegedly seen the creature and smelled a strong ammonia-like odor, and found nothing but footsteps and a dog sniffing at the place. After relating their tale to family and friends, rumors began to spread throughout the city regarding UFO sightings and alien creatures being abducted by military forces. 2 days later, another creature was allegedly found lying along the road. Three military trucks were supposedly sent to retrieve it. Allegedly, a similar creature was reportedly seen at the local zoo by its janitors. The following months, three animals mysteriously died. In regards to this creature, an official inquiry led by the Brazilian military concluded in 2010 that the Silva sisters had actually come across a homeless, mentally unstable man nicknamed Mudihin, you know, covered in mud, and that the military trucks were operating in their normal schedule that night. If you have ever had any UFO experiences, please be sure to report it to www.mufon.com. For more information about MUFON and Newfoundland and Labrador, please be sure to check out the Newfoundland UFO Network on Facebook. Thanks, John.
Thank God. It's time for oddities.
It's alive! It's alive!
Boy, that escalated quickly.
I want to believe.
Welcome to the desert of the real.
Oddity.
Alright guys, it's time for Oddities. 10 strange but very true facts about our very odd, odd world. And you know what? I'm sure we're all sick to death with all this crazy Halloween stuff. Let's be honest. I'm not going to do oddities about creepy, crawly, weird stuff. You have no further to look than right out your own backyard. Let's talk about some odd stuff to do with animals. Number one, did you know a blue whale heart only beats 9 times a minute? Think about that. That's like hardly at all. Did you know a cat uses its whiskers to determine if a space is too small to squeeze through? My poor cat. I don't know how many more spaces she's got to squeeze through, poor thing. Did you know a chameleon's tongue is twice the length of its own body? That's really interesting. I know a lot of people like that. Did you know a crocodile's tongue is attached to the roof of its mouth? So, to get a feeling for how that would be, take your head, turn it upside down, and start to chew. Did you know rodents' teeth never stop growing? I know that for a fact because my little Faith, my little girl's got a pet hamster for her birthday back in August, and his teeth are huge. Did you know a shark can detect one part of blood in 100 million parts of water? Of course you do, because you're a fan of the movie Jaws, and that was one of the lines from the movie. Did you know the penguin is the only bird that can swim but can't fly? Huh. That's really interesting. You know, the first thing that popped in my head, but what about an ostrich? Then I'm like, oh yeah, ostriches don't swim. Did you know the cheetah is the only cat that can't retract its claws? That's really interesting. It literally cannot retract them. Cool. And our final oddity for tonight. Did you know a lion's roar can be heard from 5 miles away? That's really cool. That's really loud, eh? Has to have a lot of bass to travel that distance. I imagine someday when I have a more expensive studio, you might be able to hear me somewhere on Belle Island from here in St. John's. Guys, I hope you enjoyed your oddities. We're almost getting ready for our guests to come on. Who are they? Well, who is actually the answer? Don't you dare go away.
Attention all Podbean, iTunes, Stitcher, and TuneIn radio listeners. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast brings you the best in East Coast esoterica on the first of every month. Together, we can keep it growing by sharing the show on social media, subscribing to the show wherever you may be listening to it from, and by leaving feedback about your favorite episodes. John certainly needs a friend like you to help make his dreams come true, minus the alien abduction dreams. That is not cool at all. The Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Always available. Always free. Always odd.
And welcome back to the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast. Tonight I'm joined by not one, but two of, well, buddies of mine. We're hanging out together for the first time ever. I'm actually in studio with my guests.
Yes.
Which is kind of weird.
I built a studio for you.
It's almost as if I'm in some kind of parallel dimension. You know, cue the theme song right about now.
Ooh.
Good job. Good job, John. High budget special effects. I'm hanging out with two old buddies of mine, a previous guest, Mr. Steve Lake.
Hiya.
And a new guest, Mr. Shannon Lush.
John, good to see you, buddy.
I'm so happy to have the guys from The Whostorian, on my podcast tonight. Old friends of mine, Sci-Fi and the Rock friend, Steve Lake, the guy who edited my book, Newfie EVP, Talking with the Dead in Newfoundland. And of course, Shannon, who, you know, just all, it seemed like only yesterday, I was out hanging out with your mom, down hanging out at the ship.
Yes, at the ship, yeah.
Talking about her books. He comes from a long line of authors. And because this is November, and he has a book out called...
His Soldier's Coat.
Called His Soldier's Coat.
His Soldier's Coat. I was like, you know, Shannon, this is the only... it's just an excuse to get you guys on here, honest to God. But, you know, go pick up that book. It's out there. We got to love it.
On Amazon.
Guys, welcome to my show. Thank you so much for taking the time to come on. I'm super happy you came and abducted me.
Yep.
Just to update everybody, you know, who's been listening to my show for the last few months, I've been kind of, shall we say, MIA, kind of at home with a medically fragile child. So anybody who listens to my podcast knows what I'm talking about. They actually came and abducted me tonight to get me out of my house.
Yep.
I'm super happy about that. Thank you so much.
It's because of the insistence that we had. The way we do our podcast and have done for several years is with equipment and doing it live in person. And you insisted when you wanted us to be guests on the show, you kept saying, we'll do it over Skype, do it over Skype. And I was like, no, Steve, my co-host, has me spoiled. Blame him.
And
so I said, we can't do it over Skype because it won't sound as good. We had to use this beautiful equipment.
And second to that, you were less than half a kilometer from where we are now.
Yeah.
So I'm like,
I kind of feel like I should be sneaking out for midnight rendezvous.
You're slumming with us is what it is. You're used to doing Skype
yes.
because you usually get guests that Absolutely. Don't live in Newfoundland. We literally were a kilometer away from you. So, yes, absolutely. You're more than welcome to sit down and join us on this show.
I think it's great, too, because I actually get to look at you guys while I'm talking. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of nice to be able to use my mannerisms and not be talking into the closet. Because all I look at is a trench coat while I talk about, you know, crazy stuff with people. So I'm glad.
It's always good to come out of the closet.
So first things first. I got... Absolutely.
You knew the joke was going to get made eventually.
I mean, it had to be made eventually. I came out of the closet tonight, and lo and behold, I met Shannon Lush's apartment.
There you go.
It makes complete sense now.
Don't you try to turn this back on me, pal.
But, of course, the love of podcasting is what brought us together. Guys, tell me about your show. I'm going to start with Steve, of course, because when I think Doctor Who, I think of Steve. Sorry, Shannon, it's true. It's not because you don't know as much or as into much about Shannon.
He knows more.
Really?
Yes.
It's just... I associate Steve with because I know Steve a little better.
Oh man.
Tell me the story about how you two... Who historians came together?
Well, way back in the magical time of the 90s, there was Shannon Lush and several people who belonged to the as-yet-unnamed Doctor Who fan club of Newfoundland.
Hmm.
Shannon, pronounced that acronym for me.
Utificon.
this is actually a thing.
They acronymed it. It's a Utificon.
Wow.
And from there came the Whostorian Quarterly Fan Magazine. Mm. Of which Shannon is one of the last editors of the original print run. Mm. So the two of us palling around one time, talking away, and he had been doing another podcast and said, you know, it's a shame we just can't sit down and talk Doctor Who. And I said, why not? And went and bought a headset, and we literally went from there. Mm. Within about, from conception to recording was maybe...
A couple of days, tops.
Yeah.
Because we met up at Tim Hortons to talk about it.
Mm. And... I went to Staples and off we went. Mm. So the Whostorian was reborn as a podcast.
I often say, like the Cyberman, he continually upgraded himself. So we went from having very like basic microphone systems right to what we have now. And it's continually, even tonight, he actually brought over a new adapter so we can do more plugins and stuff. So I just went, Steve, you handle the technical stuff, the nuts and bolts. I'll just talk.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worked out so far, I must say, for years and years and years. We've achieved heights that we didn't think were possible.
6 years strong now, talking Doctor Who.
And there's one thing I could say. I'll admit it. I'm not the biggest Doctor Who fan in the world.
Get him!
But I will say this. If Jesus had a podcasting voice, it would sound like you guys sound like on your show. You sound delightful. Wow. And I know a lot of people who are like, you know, like... If there was a way to make your show better, how would it be? And I always say I want my sound quality better. So I sit home and I work on my podcast and try to make it sound great. And it's a lot of work and it's time consuming. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you guys got a great system. There you go. Mm-hmm. There's also a love of the paranormal, though, from both of you guys on different ends, which is so cool. Steve is kind of into a bunch of stuff. I know, of course, I had Steve on the podcast before talking about ghosts. In fact, it was called Ghosts with Steve Lake. Which was really interesting.
Mm-hmm.
But Shannon, he's more into like the conspiracies and the UFO type thing. And I think that's really cool. So, you know, I'm sure you guys could probably relate an episode of Doctor Who or even two.
Or 600.
I mean, it's all about, well, really a parallel dimensions and stuff like that, mm-hmm. correct? So, I mean, there's all kinds of things that kind of segue into that. But like, tell me a little tiny bit about your love for conspiracies and UFOs, Shannon.
Well... Before we go any further, let's just reveal that this evening as we record this is the day that more documents about the JFK assassination were released. I don't know if you know about that.
Juicy.
Yeah, thousands and thousands of documents that have been previously sealed for years. Our good friend President Trump actually authorized the release of them. Not that I'm a big believer in the JFK conspiracy stuff, but it's always interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, John, they go back. I think, I don't know if you are you familiar with Whitley Strieber and Bud Hopkins?
Not entirely. Not my cup of tea.
Well, Whitley Strieber was allegedly abducted by aliens in the 1980s and wrote a book called Communion and a couple of others, Transformation, books about UFOs. Now, the thing that was interesting was that he was a New York Times bestselling author when he did so. So, of course, people accused him of, you know, you're fabricating an imaginary story. But when he had that occur to him, he met and was regressive hypnotized by a man by the name of Bud Hopkins, who himself wrote a book called Intruders. That book came out when I was in, I'm going to say grade 9, and that was sort of my first introduction in a real literal sense to what the idea of alien abduction was. I grew up reading the Time Life books. I don't know if you remember those.
The mysteries of the shiny covers?
That's right. That's right.
Uh-huh, I remember those.
My uncle had, I was on vacation in St. Joseph's, and my uncle
I had the pyramids one.
Yeah, I had all, well, I mean, I had all of them because of him, and I read voraciously through all of them, but it didn't really kick off for me until those early 90s and reading that book. And from there, of course, Fox really helped, Fox Television, because they came out with sightings and they did, like, you know, all kinds of different conspiracy things.
That was
the height of In Search Of.
Oh, yeah. Leonard Nimoy, I think of.
There was the alien abduction, or not the alien abduction, Alien Autopsy, the television series. Roswell, of course. So that sort of kicked off my fascination with aliens and all things paranormal from that point. But yeah, conspiracy theories, boy, they got big for me too. Yeah, they really did, yeah.
Yeah, and, you know, it's interesting too, you know, there's always that political climate. You know, you mentioned Trump already, and it's like, you just got to link him to all this stuff.
I'm pretty sure with the internet the way it is now, I think you're obligated to mention Trump every 5 minutes.
Yeah, right? I think that's the plan.
Yeah.
He is mother brain.
But you think there's a conspiracy to that too.
Could very well be.
That's the conspiracy.
Well, apparently the Simpsons predicted all this already, which is really blows my mind.
Yeah,
like the Simpsons have predicted everything. Yeah. It's kind of creepy.
Don't blame me. I voted for Kodos.
Yeah. I voted. Speaking of you, the love of ghosts, of course, have already been discussed, but I know you're into different things too. So why don't you tell me a little bit about your paranormal love, Steve?
Oh my God. Ghosts, magic, witches, vampires, werewolves.
How many books on the subject have you written so far? You wrote a short story.
I wrote short stories. I have some short vampire fiction out in a world I created.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a buddy cop scenario with two detectives. One's a vampire, one's human.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a trip to write. I got to get back to them and see what they're doing at the office these days. The Full Moon series, Legacy of the Full Moon, was the first one. And it's actually available for free through Amazon.
There you go.
Cheap plug for myself.
Nothing wrong with cheap plugs. I'm all about the cheap plugs.
He's got the cheap plug.
I'm the king of the cheap plugs.
Enginebooks.com. You can find the collections under the Sci-Fi on the Rock collections. Fantasy from the Rock or such like that.
Yeah, and I think it's really awesome that, you know, that love is translated into different things for you guys. Mm-hmm. And it makes no surprise at all. There's no surprise at all to me that you guys are into Doctor Who because it's such a paranormal type thing. Tell me about some of your adventures with your own podcast.
Where to begin? When I first started, you know, when we first started, I had previously done podcasts and stuff. So I knew it was a thing, but I also grew up with Steve Windsor, a friend of mine who got me into Doctor Who, and he moved away from the province years ago. So I didn't really, it was as I got to know Steve Lake that I realized, oh, this guy's a big Whovian. I can work with this.
And a nerd.
And a big nerd. So as I got to know and realized that he had a very deep love and appreciation for not just Doctor Who, but classic Doctor Who as well. He can cover the breadth of the original series and the new. I said, this guy's, you know, this is as close as I'm going to get when it comes to having a perfect co-host for a podcast about Doctor Who. So, of course, we branded it as The Whostorian because I wanted to continue that legacy of the magazine locally and have a presence, the Whostorian presence in Newfoundland.
I know the stories and can riff on the stories and discuss the different acting and what I did like and what I didn't like in the show. He can tell you what the producers... third cousin had for breakfast.
So when we started, it was obviously very humble because I just thought, okay, we can get a couple hundred people to listen to us just rant rave about Doctor Who, then it'll be great. And I always wanted, and Steve agreed with this, and we both formulated the plan, we want our show to be different. We don't want it just to be we're slavishly following what's currently happening. We want to talk about the history of the series, the behind the scenes. And we used to sort of fantasize, what if we got a doctor? You know, what if we got actually somebody? There's only so many people who have played the role. So, and I mean, Newfoundland's off the beaten path. How are we going to get them? So that was sort of a fantasy in our heads. And as the years progressed, we actually did, just a couple of months ago, actually had Colin Baker, the Sixth Doctor, on.
My God. It's almost as if this whole Sci-Fi and the Rock thing was put together just so you guys could get a doctor on your podcast.
I mean, I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that.
Conspiracy.
I'm not going to say that.
I'm not going to say he's the vice president of Sci-Fi and the Rock and has a vote in the committee. I'm not going to say that.
I'm also not going to say where he's giving me high fives on the table right now.
So, yeah, it took off. We ended up getting, you know, and still do get a lot of guests that we just never expected. We never thought we'd interact with people that are notables in Doctor Who, from the most, arguably the most popular male companion in the original series, actor by the name of Fraser Hines, who played Jamie, but also, again, like a doctor.
And I mean, we've branched out everywhere in between from there. We've spoken to some great British actors that we've been introduced to and met, listened to some audio dramas. Kenton Hall pops to mind, and...
Bill Oberst,
journey. You talked to Bill.
Yeah, I had Bill on, actually. Yes. It was so strange. Guest, yeah. Bill added me on Twitter somehow.
Because he follows us.
I guess probably. That's how it happened. He seems interacting. Anyway, his name kind of got stuck in my head. But anyway, I was at Piper's, of all places, and picked up a movie called Abraham Lincoln versus the Zombies.
Same story happened to me.
Yep, same thing happened to Shannon.
Are you... Yeah, that is so freaking weird.
Conspiracy, man.
There's a conspiracy there.
Anyway, I picked up the DVD and I was like, this is so strange. I was like, wait a second.
Bill Oberst.
That face looks so familiar. I've seen this before. You guys had him on your podcast. And I was like, oh my God. It all clicked in my head. I was like, I got to get this guy on my podcast. And because I knew you guys, I think he was kind of like, oh yeah, sure.
And is he not like a tremendous actor?
He's an awesome dude. And he told me a chilling ghost story from his childhood. Mm-hmm. Man. You got to check out that episode. It was crazy. And it's so great because... it just goes to show you, like, whoever is into this, there's always that little tiny bit of paranormal going on in the background. Mm-hmm. How many times have you heard, you know, in our lives, oh, there's no such thing as ghosts, there's not such a thing, but
this one time.
I didn't say there's no such thing as ghosts.
Mm-hmm. Right? So, everyone's had some strange experiences and stuff like that that's unexplainable and it kind of sends the old chill up the back. Have you guys ever had a paranormal experience?
Several.
Yeah.
Too many to count at this point.
I've had,
and we've talked about this.
Myself. I've had situations where that you could construe it as paranormal, but I just don't. You know what I mean? Like,
it's the Sherlock Holmes dilemma for Shannon. Once you eliminate the impossible, whatever remains, however probable, must be the truth.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
Or it's the other way around. Once you eliminate the possible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. Mm-hmm. Shannon wants to know what the improbable is, and he will not accept it as the paranormal until we can prove it wrong.
For the most part, I take sort of, I won't say a harsh skeptical view, but I definitely look at things more critically than just leaping to conclusions. Like, if I see something that could be an optical illusion, I'm not going to immediately say it's a ghost. If I see something that's strange in the sky, I'm not going to immediately leap to it's a UFO.
Speaking of which, got to mention it.
Yeah.
St. John's Harbor.
Yeah.
Just the other day.
I wanted that to be a UFO.
Did it hit in the water or did it hit on land or did it burn up completely?
It seemed to me like it disappeared behind something. I don't know if it was a mountain or something.
Southside Hills.
Yeah, like it just disappeared to me, so.
But I'm not sure if it burnt up completely or if it might have splashed down instead of hitting land.
It was awful.
Did you feel for a few minutes, like when that story broke, did you feel a little thrill as we don't know what this is?
Always.
And like, did you feel kind of let down when they did sort of explain, well, it's just a meteorite?
I was let down that A, there were not giant death machines walking into St. John's Harbor. And B, I don't have any superpowers.
Once again, I also voted for never mind. Just want to fail to mention that. No, but yeah, we dashed the hopes.
I was expecting heat rays, you know.
But let me ask you this, John. Like, do you feel that the way that paranormal means and motives are relayed in the press have just been relentlessly skewered towards mocking and ridiculing things that could very well be proven to be paranormal?
I believe 100% that it's all about the almighty dollar. And I hate to use the word ghost hunters. The TV show is a great example of that, right? The exploitation there. Like, you can see as seasons went on how things got different. And, I mean, really the TV shows to me are the best indicator of that. Suddenly every show is like haunted this, haunted that.
Yeah.
And you also have like the gimmicky shows like Naked and Afraid. Like, you have naked ghost hunting now.
Naked and Scared.
Because...
or Naked and Afraid. Yeah, Naked and Afraid. Sorry, I'm watching a different series.
Yeah, there you go. No, you gotta watch the R version, man. Things she does with that K2 meter, let me tell you.
But I just feel that...
that's like, registering
as,
body heat.
As somebody who... you know, like my first and foremost love when it comes to anything, and I'll put UFOs into the paranormal realm. Mm-hmm. It's arguable that they are, but let's put it in there. I just think that, like, I've read lots of books on Roswell. I read lots of books on Rendlesham Forest. Big famous UFO, whether it be a sightings or abductions. In the media, it's just painted as, oh, you're crazy and you're, you know, it's they question your motives. And a lot of the times, yes, there are people who financially benefit from telling stories. Like, I mean, Stanton Friedman, for example. Do you know who he is?
Yes.
Okay. I love Stanton Friedman, but he believes everything.
He's way out there.
But yeah. I mean, he leans on the fact that I'm a physicist. Yes. So therefore, I'm infallible, right? When he makes his books. And God love him. He's come here and he's, you know, he sold books and he's the one who really popularized the idea of Roswell. So for that alone, he obviously deserves credit. But he also peddles his wares and opens himself up to an awful lot of criticism. And then you look at the other side of it and go, well, maybe there's something to what he's saying, you know, and there's always something to be had. I appreciate the skeptical viewpoint. I'm not like Steve. I'm not going to, if I saw what Steve claims to have seen and he's told stories like this before,
mm-hmm.
I would say, well, I wouldn't immediately leap to ghost. I'm not saying I wouldn't eventually get there.
Mm.
If I, as you said, I had to eliminate all the other,
I don't start immediately at ghosts. Like even my own apartment, I claim is haunted.
By you.
I invite you to check out sometime. And Mike Barrington can back this one up because he was there.
Mm-hmm.
Of all things, and speaking of the TV shows, me and him were sat down one night watching Most Haunted. Wonderful. It was early on in the British series. It was great.
Mm-hmm.
I'm watching Most Haunted. It's just me and Mike in the apartment. There's nobody upstairs. My landlord was actually in Texas. Even his dog was at his sister's place. So the house is completely empty except for myself and Mike Barrington. And they're doing the thing on Most Haunted. They're sitting there table tipping and calling out. And if anybody is here, can you please let us know in some way? And the host says, if there's anybody out there, knock once to let us know. And from my bedroom, we hear. And Mike looks at me and goes, the hell? And I look down the hallway because I'm used to knowing, yeah. I have accepted that my house is haunted. And,
oh my God! See what I'm saying?
And
he accepts that his house.
And I look down towards my bedroom and I go, "Not you. We know you're here." And there's a corresponding.
How settling, Steve?
No, that was not settling at all.
It's a 65-year-old farmhouse. It's not doing much more settling.
That's right. I mean, this is what I'm going to throw there at you. Like, and I say this to everybody, right? Obviously, you guys know I'm in the EVP. It's my thing, and there's a reason why I'm in the EVP. And it's my thing because.
Steve is looking at me like waiting for me to say something.
I'm waiting for it.
Because at least there's something there. You know, a lot of people have their reservations about what it could possibly be. I mean, you know, we hear everything from audio pareidolia, you know, how our mind fills in the blanks and stuff. And, you know, there's lots of things. But, you know, at the end of the day, some of these EVP are pretty intelligent. And it's very strange that they're coming through in the timely fashion they're coming through. What difference between a ghost story and, you know, actually getting some data is a little bit different, right? Like tonight, I gave a presentation the night at Marjorie Muse mm-hmm. Library and talked to 15 people in there tonight. And the first thing I looked at them and said was, hey, this equipment doesn't work. K2 meter doesn't work. It doesn't work. It's used for a proactive approach for certain things, right? And as I'm going through the equipment and stuff like that, I kind of like, okay, here's a spirit box and here's a recorder. These are two things I like to use because I find, you know, what I've caught on these are probably a little bit more credible than, say, a lot of the pictures I've taken where I'm not very good with the pictures, and next thing you know, we got orbs flying everywhere, everyone thinks they're real, and you don't really know. My thought, and this is something I always tell people when it comes to the paranormal.
I've tried for pictures.
99% of what I caught is utter and complete garbage. It's that 0.1, man. It's that 0.1 that it makes you just take a chance and actually listen and be like, yeah, that is kind of weird that you got that at that point, right?
Now, I've heard a couple of the 1% that he's talking about that he's gotten, the ones from your uncle's cabin.
I mean.
And I know I'm waiting for him to go off on the EVP thing.
But he's his not, podcast. I'll let him have his say.
He has less of a belief in EVP than he does in the paranormal itself, which is cool because everybody has their own opinions of it all.
Yep.
And I mean, the man himself is saying 99% of what he captures is explainable and background garbage. But there's that 1% when he's sitting in a cabin and it comes through loud and clear. Is that you, John? Repeatedly. Like, you can't pick up a radio wave that says that. I'm reasonably asserting. Yes, no, but that would say it confirming and repeatedly.
So another thing I tell people is don't confuse what I do with what other people do, right?
Mm.
Take the time. There's all kinds of people out there who do what I do and do it their own little ways and stuff, man. And it's so interesting to get into that. Like, I mean, me and Steve talked at length about Hans Holzer. And now his daughter has done some really wonderful things too, right?
Oh, I'm going to have to follow up.
You have to check that out, man. Yeah. That's cool. Like, trying to carry on the legacy, but way more technology than he had.
Love reading his work. He didn't need technology.
He had a witch and a pen and a pad of paper. That was about it.
That's it.
He did all right.
Two mediums, a pendulum, and a half shaker full of salt.
Exactly. We always get into the conversation, though. Let's just throw the skepticism to the side just for 1 second. Let's say this stuff exists. Now we get to the real question. How does it exist? Where is it coming from? And we get to talk right back into Doctor Who again. Because the only possible explanation is that this is coming from another dimension of space.
Bleeding through into our own.
Yeah. Tell me about some of the episodes of Doctor Who.
There's a scientific one for you. We just, not even an episode, but we covered an audio play. Mm-hmm. That part of it actually disturbs Shannon for the subject matter in there, because essentially they interact with purgatory.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they basically have Doctor Who go to the afterlife.
Oh, boy.
It's called The Ghost of Innspace.
The Ghost of Innspace, Innspace being outside of us, and it's described essentially as purgatory.
Oh, boy.
It's the spirit world leading
overtly
through.
Overtly as purgatory, almost.
Yeah. They don't even hide it.
Yeah. Creepy.
Yep.
Which I just thought was just a bit...
The show itself has gone to different dimensions, has moved to different parts of space, normal space, us versus a secondary space, e-space. They've even dealt with demons who turned out to be aliens from another planet.
Hmm. Mm.
Doctor Who's a long history, like in the original series up to the new, of essentially stating that a lot of the... what we would consider like a Judeo-Christian devil, for example, was revealed as a alien being in the form of what we would view as the devil.
It's just his natural form.
And
interesting.
It's you know, similar to the ancient aliens theory, where he visited Earth at an ancient period and race memory basically carried through the present day, and therefore we all have a fear of what we consider to be the devil. Generally, Doctor Who tends to be more scientific, but yes, they absolutely put in things that are paranormal related.
And we get, again, with the demon, the episode was called The Demons, and we got to the ridiculous where the antagonist, the Master, was dressed in his red robes and summoning pentagrams. And
it was the height of Hammer Horror
films. It was the height of Hammer Horror films when they did it, and there is a little stone gargoyle running around killing people.
Yeah.
They shoot him. the army is very practical when encountering an alien life form.
Like,
shoot
how
it.
How do I not like the show?
I don't know. I don't know.
And I love British people. I don't understand. Like, what is it that I just can't grab? Maybe it's just too true to life. Tell me a little tiny bit about we kind of mentioned the UFO and the conspiracy and stuff like that. What do you think is probably like the definitive UFO case in your mind that like
Raiders
makes you
from
think,
Forest.
Yeah.
So, from Forest.
So tell me a little bit about like what part of that you feel is like the most, shall we say, convincing.
Okay. I won't give a huge overview of it because I mean that's just going to be boring for people. I mean they can just Google it. But essentially, to me, what makes a great UFO mystery is physical evidence. In which case, in Rendlesham Forest's case, there was. Basically, a lot of physical evidence based on UFO that landed. They took soil samples. The UFO, when it landed, impacted on trees and limbs of trees, and there was remains of that. It also extended from a period of a couple of days. Different people involved, up to 100 people, witnessed or had secondary encounters with what may or may not have been UFOs and alien beings. Those were all sober, serious-minded military people during the early height of the Cold War. They were basically they were representatives of Bentwater Base, an Air Force base in England. And they were American servicemen on a British Air Force base is what it was. They had leased the base. So they were not people who had a predisposition towards anything in the paranormal realm. They were literally guarding a base that, at the time, this has been alleged, had nuclear weapons when they shouldn't have had nuclear weapons. But, I mean, they were stationed so close to Russia because it was the height of the Cold War. So, and then those servicemen who had this happen to them, they were security, military, police men. When they had that happen to them on night one, by night two, their base commander, deputy base commander, Charles Holt, said, I'm going to debunk all this. I'm going to go out there myself, take a squad out and just investigate this. Then he himself had encounters. So this continued for a couple of days. There was American investigative people involved in it because they were American servicemen, but it was on British soil. So there was a liaison between the American servicemen and the British Ministry of Defense. There's all kinds of documents that came out about it. It's recent and fresh. Most of the people involved were firsthand eyewitnesses. They've told stories that have not contradicted in the 40 plus years up to this point. There is some contradiction with some of the people who obviously like try to exploit the story. Oh, I was there. and this happened to me, and then it turns out it never. But a lot of the people who were involved have vociferously clung to that story. And even with the threat of having their pensions taken away from them, with their professional careers and lives ruined, have still said, no, this happened to me. I don't care. This happened to me, and I'm sticking to it. And they have steadfastly stuck to it up to this point. That, to me, is a very, very credible case. And that, to me, is something that I look at and say, even if I don't necessarily believe in UFOs, something significant happened to a significant amount of people that they themselves are not just somebody seeing something in a trailer park. Not to say it's bad, but they're not somebody seeing something. They're not civilians. They're military people who are trained professionals. And they're seeing something outside of the realm of possibility that wasn't a Russian ship or it wasn't something that could be easily identified and characterized. It was literally something out of the ordinary. So that to me is probably, from what all I know about UFOs and UFO abduction, that's the one that really fascinates me the most.
I wish everyone who's listening to the podcast could be in the room with me right now watching Shanta. I can just see the love for this subject. And I got to ask this question because it's the first thing that popped my mind. Aliens. Are they from a different part of the galaxy, universe, whatever, or are they us from the future? What do you think is more plausible?
Both. Rendlesham actually has an element to it in which one of the people involved, when they touched the hieroglyphics on the ship, were given a mental stimulation, I guess you could say, of a series of binary numbers, which indicates that they might actually be people from the future. Because of the location of where the binary numbers traced out to. It's a long story. You'd have to really Google it. But well, really, essentially, it comes out to
that's very Philadelphia experiment.
That's a tremendous movie, too.
No, that story is bordering on the Philadelphia experiment.
But just remember, what we're really talking about here. We're talking about a universal language that doesn't actually exist, which is math.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So that's very fascinating that that's what they use, code numbers. Yeah. Because we all know that that's an abstract idea that we came up with.
No, that's just my phone. Speaking of paranormal related.
Siri's been doing this to us all night.
Yeah. Hey, Siri.
Yeah.
No, she doesn't respond.
Really?
She doesn't respond.
She'll just say things.
Randomly, she starts saying stuff to us.
And she only... listen, John, I'll tell you. Speaking of strange, magnetic, possible electrical interference...
yep.
She only does that when we're doing podcasting.
Huh.
She only do that in the hour from our podcast to sitting down with you.
Siri is a fan of yours. I can't wait for you guys, and she wants you to continue doing this.
No, Skynet is taking over.
That's right. In answer to your question, I think it's both. I think that the universe is populated by intelligent beings.
Okay.
And I think that, yes. But the problem I have with time travel is
that... We're not supremely arrogant enough to believe that we're alone in the universe?
Yeah. The problem I do have with time travel is that there's not enough proof of it. There's not enough proof that people from the future have come back to our time. Do you know what I mean? Like, you would think if time travel was ever invented in human history, from let's assume that the world's going to continue on, why aren't we seeing more people from a far distant future coming back to our time now where we can document that?
Depends on what laws they have in place in the future.
I mean, it's possible. As a Doctor Who fan, there is Time Lords.
There's also that picture, time travel guy from the shot from the 60s.
Oh, yeah.
That's with Charlie Chaplin.
Yeah, there's a guy who got like, and that was a woman who was walking with a phone. It looked like or something.
No, there's a guy stood in a crowd of people wearing like 40s and 50s period clothing, and this guy's got like a polo shirt and a pair of Ray-Bans.
Anachronistic, yeah.
You know, yeah. It's just anachronistic placement.
Interesting. Okay.
Personally, I think I've gone back a couple of times. There is a paradox somewhere in this city that friends of mine refer to as time traveling Steve.
Mm-hmm.
It looks to be me in my 60s,
complete
to dress code down to a battered fedora.
Wow.
And
a battered fedora.
Yeah. You know, the battered fedora hat that I usually wear. And he frequents shops downtown.
Interesting.
Friend of mine worked at a bakery downtown, and she told me every couple of days, time traveling Steve is coming for a sandwich.
That's so cool.
And she's like, you're not allowed ever to meet yourself.
You would explode?
I'm like, because of the Blinovich limitation effect.
Doctor Who.
Yeah, Doctor Who.
No, you're absolutely correct. The Blinovich limitation effect says there will be an explosion that could destroy time.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I just want to pass by myself and drop next week's lotto numbers on the ground? That would would that be too much to ask, or would he cease to exist? Would it cause the biggest paranormal explosion since the Tunguska incident in 1909? Thank you, Ray Stantz. Who knows?
Or maybe time travel is possible, but they can't interact with what's around us.
Yeah, but why would I come back to here and not interact with myself?
Ah, we watch TV, don't we?
I would go see everybody else I know.
I'm going back to the dinosaur times. I want to see
the
these things.
The question I
want to
know is if future Steve is still doing the historian.
Probably.
I need to know that. I think it's fair.
Yeah. All right, Steve, you told us one of your ghost stories and kind of, come on, tell us another one of your stories. You said you had multiple experiences. Give me your weirdest one.
That one isn't weird enough?
Okay, well, the knocking one was kind of creepy, but I want to hear one more before I piddle you guys out of here. Put you back in the blue box and send you on your way.
the weirdest one? Okay. Again, our mutual friend, Mike Barrington. Mr. Barrington, God love him. His family house in the east end of St. John's is a wonderfully patchworked piece of construction engineering that has been upgraded and grown over the years from a small cabin at the time to a family home. It's changed several times. My first time at the Barrington residence, me and Mike pulled in one night. I was a passenger in his van. He said, I got to run in for a minute and get something. I said, okay, cool. Mike goes in the house. I have not been inside the house at this point. Had not seen the layout. We're there about 10 minutes, and I'm kind of sitting in the car just listening to music, half daydreaming. Mike comes out, and I'm like, there's an old lady in the back of your house that's not happy. And he said, wait, what? I was like, there's an old lady in the back of your house on the right-hand side that's not happy. And there's an old man in a rocking chair. He's like, shut up. I'm like, what do you mean, shut up? He's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I don't know. I'm just telling you what I'm getting looking at your house. I said, and on the left-hand side, there's a younger man who passed recently. He's like, shut up. So apparently what I had described from the layout of the house just generally was his grandmother in the kitchen, his grandfather in a rocking chair that still rocks intermittently to this day with nobody in it, and an uncle, I think it was, who had passed away in a back room on the left that's now a living room. And I had never been inside Mike's house to that point.
Okay, that's pretty creepy. Yeah, I don't want
to know. I described his family ghosts to him, having never heard from Mike tell me that before.
Yeah, and I encourage anybody who is a fan of Doctor who loves that show.
Shannon's never heard that story. He's looking at me completely skeptically now.
Yeah, but
I love skepticism.
Listen,
don't
John
you guys
pass
see
on
it?
The EVP, so.
Yeah.
Guys, don't
I got to be skeptical here.
Don't you guys see? This is why you get along so good. Opposites are what makes podcasting so much fun. And also why the voices in my head keep me entertained all the time, because I do this alone. You know, first I got to say, guys, thanks so much for dragging me out of my closet and coming to see. That joke is never going to die.
No,
never.
No.
Thank you for coming and rescuing me. I really need to get out of the house tonight. I really appreciate
well, John,
this.
I think you're doing a tremendous job. I've been a fan of the show since day one. I love the passion you put into the idea of the paranormal. I always wanted to do my own paranormal show, and I'm glad that you're doing it and doing it so well. Now I can't follow that act. So it's all you, buddy. You got it all going on for this paranormal across Newfoundland thing. But I've just been astounded by the array of guests you've had, the stories you've told. And I just, whether or not I agree with everything, because I certainly don't want to come as EVP, but I love the passion people put into things, right? I love debating intelligently when it comes to why people believe. I think that the world needs more belief in something, you know, instead of just being your worldview is so narrow and limited. I just like the idea of believe in something, even if it's not EVP. Believe in UFOs, believe in ghosts, believe in Bigfoot, whatever you have to believe.
I believe in
there's
Doctor
always
Who.
Something out there, and believe in Doctor Who, and I believe in Style and Steve. That should be our shirt. That should be a
well,
T-shirt.
I believe in Style and Steve.
Oh my god,
that'll be the next T-shirt.
Yeah, because you can tell the future story. You
I'll
can
get a fedora.
Future
I'll get a
Style
fedora.
And
put the script over it.
Yeah,
way better. Way better than that flying spaghetti monster thing you were getting on with a few years ago. Way better.
You didn't believe in the flying spaghetti monster, did you?
His noodly appendages touch us all.
Oh, Steve.
No, I don't.
I'm declaring the historian dead and buried.
I am
it's
not
over
a pastafarian. Thank you very much.
You know, and to reiterate what you said, you know, I came into paranormal investigation as an atheist, and I'm leaving not an atheist. Yeah. So that's just the way it is. And
it opens your eyes so much.
Yeah, I mean, I always tell people, you know, like, It's the stories, it's the people I meet that make me want to keep doing it. So I'm super happy to be coming here with you guys. And, you know, to be able to, this is the first, man, be able to sit down and actually chill and record together. Is pretty
it's
cool.
good, isn't it? Is it
it's
not good?
Fun. It's fun.
Does it makes not, me feel like I have a social life. Do this? Yeah. Does guys, it not make you want to do this more often?
Shannon, do you guys think you guys can come over and hang out in my closet sometime?
I've seen the closet. Your basement's got more room.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah. Steve?
Johnny gave me quite the workout in his basement. That's not helping the closet metaphor, it was literally a workout program.
I'm going to do some cheap plugs. You can find us at thehistorian.ca. That's our website and repository. I'm going to say that word before Steve gets it, because that's usually his word. You can find us on iTunes under the Doctor Who, The Historian. I'm on Twitter at Marshall Law. Steve's on Twitter at Silent Steve, and we're both on there and at The Historian. And we have a Facebook page, The Historian.
Facebook.com/TheHistorian.
Yes. Yeah. You can find John where?
John is at Odd to Newfoundland.
Yeah.
NFLD. Yeah, the old spelling on Twitter.
Yeah. Gotta love it, man.
How long have you been doing this now, John?
I just celebrated third year anniversary in April.
Sweet. Really? Wow. So, 3 years, man.
It's been a long time.
Wow. 3 years.
Going it alone.
It took me 3 years to pass you to get on our show.
Guys, thanks so much for being on the show. Take care.
Thanks
Absolutely.
For having us, John.
It's a pleasure, my friend.
Well, the time to say goodbye is upon us. But don't worry, you can keep track of the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast very easily. It's available on Stitcher, iTunes, Podbean, and TuneIn Radio. Just look for the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast banner. Of course, if you'd like to keep up to date, you can always check out the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast Facebook page, drop a like, and every single time a new show goes up, you'll be notified. You can also follow me, John Mallard, on Twitter, at ODDTONFLD. That's Odd to Newfoundland. Get your latest news on the podcast as well as the ever popular parajoke of the day. From the oldest city in North America, I bid you adieu from the Odd to Newfoundland Paranormal Podcast.